Hello and welcome to Automators, the show where we talk about grabbing your technology, learning how best you can make the most of it, and getting it to do your bidding for you. I'm Rosemary Orchard and joined as always by David Sparks. Hey David, how are you?
Hey Rose, how are you today?
I'm doing all right, David. It's been a bit of a slog the last couple of weeks, but I get to talk to you again and that's always exciting.
It's always fun to talk Automators. And we have a guest today. Welcome to the show, Tim Stringer.
Thanks very much. It's great to be here.
Tim is the gentleman that runs Learn OmniFocus, among many other things, and always has interesting automation tales to share. I can tell by our outline that we could make this a week-long episode, and that might be fun. But Tim, thanks for coming. I'm looking forward to digging in on this stuff with you. But before we do, we have a bit of an announcement, don't we, Rose?
Yes, we do, David. Do you want to go ahead with this, or do I take point on it?
I guess, why don't you start?
Well, it's been 166 episodes of Automators so far, if we're including this episode, and it's been going on for a long time, and we've been having a lot of fun, but recently it has been becoming a bit too much like hard work, and there's only so much that automation can do to make that better for everybody, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, gang, we're retiring the Automators. I guess I don't know how else to put it. The show we've been doing for a long time. Rose and I both love making the show. It's a lot of work, though, and both Rose and I have a lot of irons in the fire, and we've been having some friendly conversations with each other about, you know, how do we get better at this stuff and how do we make it more efficient? But we ultimately decided, you know, that between Rose's job and company and other, you know, engagements she has, and between my other podcasts and the things I do, that we had to cut back a bit. And we decided to jointly that the Automators would be the one where we do that. So with a sad heart, and for the first time in my life I've ever shut down a podcast, we're going to retire the Automators next month.
Yes. Yeah. So it's been over 6 years, which is a pretty long time. You know, we started in July 2018, David, by throwing out a good couple of episodes because Apple announced Shortcuts, which, you know, it was a fun way to start the podcast, actually, having to throw things away and start over again because there was new and exciting stuff. And it's not that there isn't new and exciting stuff out there. There is plenty of it. It's just that we don't have the time and the bandwidth, which is a real shame. There's only so much you can automate in your life to create those, unfortunately.
Yeah, as I'm heading into the new year, I can say personally, I really want to focus on quality over quantity on the things I'm doing. And that required some tough decisions. Both of us love making the show. If time were unlimited, I think we would. But, you know, just kind of looking at my life, I have worked every weekend for the last 3 months, and I felt like, you know, I've got to change things a little bit to get a little bit more margin. And from my vantage point, I can tell you that, you know, we're going to be covering these Automator topics over on Mac Power Users more. I suspect a lady named Rosemary Orchard will be showing up on Mac Power Users on occasion to talk to us about that stuff. So I think we can still bring you a lot of the good Automators content over on Mac Power Users, but it really is just a question of bandwidth for both of us. I'll take the hit. I first suggested it, but I'll tell you, Rose, when I suggested it, you sound relieved. You know?
Yeah, it's one of those things where increasingly I've been having more and more things taking up all of my time, and it feels like I just don't have time to do everything. And as we all know, there's only so much you can do if you don't have time for everything. It doesn't matter how great your task manager is. It doesn't matter how great your automation systems are. There are only 24 hours in the day. And believe it or not, it's good to sleep for at least, say, 4 to 6 of those, if not more. And when you start cutting back on that, then you know you've got problems.
Yeah. So it's with a sad heart and a lot of love that we're bringing the Automator's journey to an end. We are going to make some great shows. Our final one will be releasing, I believe, on November 15th. We'd love for you to write in with thoughts and comments and automation questions. The last episode is going to be really focused on audience feedback. That's why one of the reasons why we're announcing this now, so you have time to send it in. There's a feedback form at relay.fm/automators. I spoke with our friend Stephen Millard, and he is going to really button down the Automator's Obsidian Vault. So he's So he's not promising it'll be done when we finish the show, but he really wants to make it really well done. I talked to him yesterday. He says, you're going to be amazed when you're able to find out how many times, David, you have said the word Akara. So I thought that was kind of funny. But, you know, we're gonna do it right as we wrap the show up. We're both sad to shut it down. And I'm sorry I'm just rambling here a bit, but this is hard for me. And I'll tell you, as much as I know this is the right move, it was really hard.
Yes. Yeah. It's one of those things where it's always really hard in life to make the right decision. But at the same time, we don't want to shortchange the listeners. You know, if we just turn up every week and phone it in and we rely heavily on our guests to do all of the work for us, then that's not going to be a good experience for anybody. And that's something that we absolutely don't want to do.
Yeah. So that's the news. And please send us your feedback for that final episode. Give us some good feedback, gang. I can't wait to hear what you all have to say. And with that, talking about having a guest carry the load for you, Tim Stringer, this guy is an automator. Tim, where do we start with this? I think maybe we should just talk about your idea of automation key learnings. We were talking about that before the show started, and there's a lot of good stuff in here that comes up frequently on the show. What have you learned about automation over the years?
Yeah, definitely. And I guess I don't even know when I started becoming an automator. It goes back to, I think, the early days of technology. So it's it was useful for me in preparing for today's episode just to kind of think back and decide for myself, what is automation? How does it help? How does it hinder? And things like that. I think it can be a bit overwhelming at times, especially in the kind of golden age of automation that we find ourselves in, where there's so many different ways to do things and so many tools, and many of these tools have become more and more capable over the years. So that's where I think it's better to take a step back and just look at it more conceptually. What do all automations have in common? And comes back to basic principles. All of them have some sort of a trigger, and there's something that happens in response to that trigger. And thinking about what could trigger this automation and what you want to happen before even choosing the tools, I think, can be very useful. And then once you're clear on sort of the path you want the automation to follow, then the choice of tools becomes a lot easier. And maybe it's several tools combined. So I just gave some examples of as we're preparing, and some examples of triggers that could be something that happens off in the internet. There's an email that arrived, or an event that just ended in Google Calendar, or somebody booked a session in Calendly. Those sorts of things that kind of happen asynchronously. I could be sleeping at night and there's a trigger that happens.
I think that's an important point though, Tim. I think people who start in automation often think that the trigger is a manual. It has to be you pushing a button or doing some action on your computer. And when you get to the crossroads of realizing, oh, wait a second, I can have it be triggered by a clock, or I can have it be triggered by something on the internet, then suddenly automation takes on a new, you know, a new level of power, because, you know, separating yourself from the trigger is something that a lot of automators don't figure out right away.
Yeah, totally. And an extension of that is device triggers. So if I'm walking around with my iPhone and I reach a location, or I connect to a different Wi-Fi network or something like that, those can be very much triggers as well. And it's not quite the same as the web one, because it does rely on a device being present in some situation, some state. But there's a lot of things that could be very useful to happen in those instances as well. And then I think the kind of the third class is the manual triggers. I'm pressing a keyboard shortcut, or launching a shortcut, or pressing a button on my Stream Deck or something like that.
Yeah, I would really like to dive a little bit more into the separating of the automations, so the actual actions that happen, from the triggers. Did you start down this path because you found that you wanted multiple triggers to run the same series of actions, or was it just a sort of natural separation that happened over time?
I think it was a natural, it's not something, it's something I noticed in hindsight, I guess is the best way I could put it. just looking at the various automations, and I've assembled quite a large suite over the years and keep adding to them. But just looking, if I had to kind of classify them, there were sort of specific triggers. But I think looking at the actions, that can be, that's a whole nother level of it. There could be a trigger that causes a shortcut to be run, whereas that shortcut could still be run manually, or there could be multiple circumstances where kind of the engine kicks into gear and it could be started. It's kind of like having a remote starter for your car versus sitting in the driver's seat and pressing the button or turning the key or something like that. They have the same results, but they're triggered in different ways.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think it was one of those things where for me, it was always very obvious with shortcuts previously before iOS 17, where you could create an automation in shortcuts and then you could just put all of your actions in there. And I was always a big advocate for no, make a shortcut and then just put the run shortcut action in there. And then in iOS 17, they changed it. So you just sort of select a shortcut to run, which I feel is a much better experience for a lot of folks as well, because it, you know, it means that you can search your shortcuts for the thing that contains whatever that word is, you know, calendar invite or whatever, and you'll find it instead of having to look there and look through your automations and just kind of like tap on each one, browse through the actions and figure out what's going on. So I'm glad to see that that has indeed worked out for you, because it is one of those things where, you know, sometimes for me, it's very obvious that this is the better approach for me, but that doesn't mean it's the better approach for everybody.
I was just going to say, having actions that are reusable, I think, is a very helpful way of looking at it too. So just kind of thinking out, this is a sequence of actions that I might want to happen in various circumstances, and not being too caught up on the trigger. At the same time, knowing that the trigger should trigger something, but not being necessarily too caught up on the actions, because that might start off as one or two actions, but over time, that could be 20 actions, but at least you have something that actually sort of spawns that automation.
Yeah, I really feel strongly that automation doesn't have to be overly complex. And something I've always tried to focus on in this show and in the stuff I talk about with this is that you don't need to make a 30-step shortcut. You know, you may need to occasionally, and as you get better at it, you may want to for one reason or another, but for most of us, you know, the 3 to 5 step shortcut often is the most effective, most stable, and, you know, just takes you a few minutes to put it together, but then it saves you minutes every time you run it. And I think that should be the target when you're getting started with this stuff.
Absolutely. Yes. And yeah, it's one of those things where it's always, you know, tricky to take those steps back and go, okay, what is it that I just need to do? What is the most difficult part of this automation, you know? Or going back to something you wrote in the document here, Tim, you've noted that automation is much about consistency as it is speed, right? It's about getting things right instead of necessarily doing things faster. Because we all know if we rush to try and do things, we'll skip a step or we'll miss something or just overlook something, which actually is really important. And for me, that's one of the reasons why I love automations. And so for me, that's often the point where I start with my automations. Well, like, you know, what is that thing that I need to get right every single time? And I don't know if that's where you start, Tim, or do you start from a different perspective?
I think it's ultimately about automation really needs to take the pressure off. It's not earning its keep unless it's making life easier in some case. So there's the ones where I can press a button and have 20 things happen that would normally take me 5 minutes or 10 minutes, but I can suddenly do it in a second. That's definitely a quality of life enhancement. And there's the other ones where, let's say I were forgetting to follow up with clients after calls, and I can just have a task automatically appear in my inbox to prompt me to do a follow-up once the session actually ends. That's not something that would take me very long to create, but I still have that sort of mental load of having to remember to do that thing, or to, you know, I'm talking to this person and then I have another call soon after. Maybe I'm going to forget to follow up with them and send some information I promised or something along those lines. So that's the way they kind of earn their keep, I guess, is to just look at how is this improving the quality of my life and work, and and both for myself and the people I serve by extension.
That makes a lot of sense. Absolutely.
So, Tim, what is your automation suite these days? What are the apps that are getting used by you here in 2024 on your various platforms?
Yeah, sure. It's going to be a fairly extensive list, but I think all of these do kind of cooperate. They work together. They're kind of Lego pieces that allow me to ultimately build the automations. I'd say the core three are Keyboard Maestro, Zapier, and Shortcuts. And all of the other ones, and I'll throw one like Hazel in there, for instance, that I almost forget about Hazel. I guess it's just doing its job in the background. And once it's up and running, I don't even really have to think about it.
That's the best app, right? When you don't even think that, you forget it exists, but it's still working for you.
Yeah, those are the best kinds of automations, I think. And one to that point, I think what helps an app kind of get to that stage is just a trust in both the app itself and my application of the app. So if I create a shortcut or something, but I haven't really thought it through and I'm wondering, you know, is this going to work in all cases or is this going to let me down or is this trigger going to be reliable, then it's almost adding pressure rather than relieving it. So I put a lot of, it's a bit of a sort of less is more sort of approach. I really want to fine tune an automation, have it be bulletproof, think through the different sort of edge cases, and then I can treat it like a Hazel where it's just doing its thing and I don't even have to think about it anymore. It's just kind of running in the background. Yeah, so I'd say those are the Zapier for automating things that happen on the web, and it's usually a combination of Shortcuts and Keyboard Maestro that takes care of the Mac automations, and then over on the iPhone and iPad, it's, I'd say, pretty much exclusively Shortcuts at this point.
That makes a lot of sense. There are other things that you can use to automate on iOS. As we all know, there's, you know, great apps like Scriptable and so on. But at the same time, you know, Shortcuts is just there. It's on every device. It comes pre-installed. It's really difficult to, you know, not consider that the default for iOS. And honestly, the fact that it now works on the Mac as well, admittedly, not all the actions, that's still a pet peeve of mine. But, you know, the fact that it's there means that, you know, I've created Shortcuts. And despite the fact that, you know, my muscle memory, whenever I'm, you know, say, for example, preparing iOS Today, which is a very Shortcuts heavy preparation system for me, I default to picking up my phone, but now what I've done is I've added a little, hey, if device is iPhone, pop up a notification. Would you like to run this on the Mac? Just to remind me that I don't have to run it on my iPhone. You know, I used to have to, but now those actions that I needed are all available on the Mac, which is, you know, it's great that you can then bring those over when you need to. But of course, you don't necessarily have to if you don't want to.
I'll just add to that too. I think that Shortcuts can be seen as a very kind of user-facing technology that can be the wrapper that takes Apple scripts and JavaScript and things like that and just turns it into what I almost start to think about as an app that I created myself that's leveraging pieces of other apps. But it's kind of designed in many cases, I think, to be interacted with it at some point. Whereas something like Keyboard Maestro and Hazel and things like that are going to be doing excellent work in the background, but not necessarily getting seen so much.
This episode of The Automators is brought to you by Notion. Try the powerful, easy-to-use Notion AI today. Just go to notion.com/automators. There's so much to love about Notion. I run the whole Mac Sparky backend off Notion. It allows me to keep in touch with my team. We all know the status of every project. We have an excellent way to communicate with each other on any questions or issues. And now with Notion AI, we've got a whole host of new features we're using on all the content I create. The new Notion AI is a single AI tool that does it all. You can search across Notion and other apps, generate docs in your own style, analyze PDFs and images, and chat with you about anything. Notion is a perfect place to organize your tasks, track your habits, write beautiful docs, and collaborate with your team. And the more content you add to Notion, the more Notion AI can personalize its responses for you. This is what I really like about this idea of Notion AI, is that it gets to read your content and then use it to help you make your content better. Because unlike generic chatbots, Notion AI already has the context of your work. Notion AI is connected to multiple knowledge sources. It uses AI knowledge from GPT-4 and Claude to chat with you about any topic. It can search across thousands of Notion docs in seconds to quickly answer any question. And with AI connectors now in beta, Notion AI can search across Slack discussions, Google Docs, Sheets and Slides, and more tools like GitHub and Jira are coming soon. As an example, as I'm working on the Shortcuts Field Guide, I put my outline into the Notion document, and then I asked Notion AI to check it for me. Sometimes it comes up with a suggestion or two that I actually end up using in the video. Notion is used by over half of the Fortune 500 companies, so you'll be in great company. Try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/automators. That's all lowercase, notion.com/automators, to try the powerful, easy-to-use Notion AI today. And when you use our link, you're supporting our show. That link one more time is notion.com/automators. And our thanks to Notion for their support of the Automators and Relay. Tim, you have listed as one of your favorite automation apps Hookmark, which is also sometimes called Hook. But it's an application that I think of as a ubiquitous linking kind of utility app. I never really thought of it as an automation app, but I kind of see where you're coming. Tell us about Hookmark.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and I have a long history with Hookmark. The original developer, Luc Beaudoin, is based right here in British Columbia. So definitely got a nice connection geographically with him. And it's one of those apps that I think once people get it, they really get it and they wonder how they lived without it. But it's a bit of a difficult one to just kind of sell people on to. It's maybe something that they need that they don't realize that they need. But fundamentally, Hookmark is about connecting stuff together, connecting a document to a file or a folder to another document to a web link to whatever you want to link together. It's kind of the glue that holds all these things together. And one use case that I've been finding very useful recently is for all of my Learn OmniFocus sort of management and all the content tracking and everything that goes into Notion. And so I'm working on a course right now on using OmniFocus with note-taking apps, which is quite a complex course. There's an extensive mind map, and there's an outline and a folder, and I'm going to be starting recording shortly, so I'm going to be managing that whole process. So I use the document or the note for the course, the one that lives in Notion, as the jumping-off point for all those things. And then I can press Control H on my keyboard and jump to the keynote file or jump to the recording folder, the document folder, or the outline. And just having all of the kind of assets linked in one place, I just find is really useful. And some of those things, especially files and folders, there's just no practical way that I've found to link them without Hookmark. There's no sort of standard file or finder links that Apple provides that makes them easy to reference. So I think that's been especially golden, just to be going from looking at notes to working on a keynote to developing an outline and having it just be like a few clicks away.
Yeah, and I would add to that, as someone who also uses Notion for production, is there's a lot of things to like about Notion, but the way it treats external links is not one of them. Notion is bad at linking outside of its own application. They largely don't work. So an application like Hookmark can give you that central clearinghouse for related links when the application doesn't cooperate.
Yeah, totally. For instance, if you put like an OmniFocus link into a Notion document, it doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to jump through hoops. I use tinyURL in those cases sometimes to create a web link that links to the application specific link, which does the job, but it's just so much easier with Hookmark.
Yeah. It's like, and it's weird because Notion has a native app, and it would be nice if they could do that stuff. Now, do you use Notion in a web browser link or in the native app on your Mac?
Neither actually. I created a Safari web app for that because I find those the most, the easiest on sort of resources. They don't take up too much memory or CPU. They launch very quickly. So there's very few web apps I use. I find the Safari ones generally work the best, even if they might be missing a few features.
Well, I really like the Notion for what we do, but that is a great way to fix that one problem of it.
Yes, yeah, it is. And I often find myself struggling a little bit with Notion or just in general cross-linking things. So, for example, my packing list. Whenever I'm going on a trip, I will create a packing list in Drafts. And I have a project in my task manager, which is OmniFocus, but you could do it in Things or Todoist or whatever you want. And then I also use TripIt for managing my trips. So that's got all the travel details and things like that in there. But that means that I want those links in all of the places. And it just kind of gets a little bit messy sometimes, like looking at all those URLs all the time. So maybe I need to experiment a bit more with Hookmark. It's one of those things where I've looked at it multiple times, but because the vast majority of applications that I use have unique URLs to most things, like, for example, Obsidian supports URL schemes for opening documents, OmniFocus does, Drafts does, etc., I have not yet really found a use case for it, but I feel like I must be missing out. So I'm going to have to give it another deeper dive.
I'd maybe start with files and folders. I think that's the, like you could have a task that says open this numbers spreadsheet or this folder and review it or something like that, because that's the, I'd say, the least linkable part of the Mac operating system. And that might kind of spawn some interest in Hookmark that, where you can find other use cases. But that's just one, I think, that's just really not possible without Hookmark. And there's something about just having a task to update a number spreadsheet and within seconds being in the spreadsheet and making changes that's, yeah, really attractive.
That's one of the advantages of having your working files in DevonThink, is that they actually do make links to files that work. But Hookmark allows you to work straight out of the Finder. Rose, you should give it a shot, because I think that someone like you would find interesting ways to use it. And the idea, you know, I mean, I talk about this idea of contextual computing, this idea that you drive right to the place you want to be in the app and the file that you need to be, is a really good workflow in this modern world where, you know, so often going to read an email requires you to navigate the inbox and the search field. And, you know, there's so many ways to get distracted along the way. Whereas when you set this stuff up in Hookmark, it's like a laser. It gets you straight to the exact place you need to be. And third-party developers and the people behind Hook have done just a really good job of making all those integrations work.
I'll just, since you mentioned email, David, say, yeah. I was going to say that the integration that Hookmark provides for email is excellent as well. And yeah, that's something where you can actually share a hook link with somebody else. So, David, if you had an email that you want to reference that both you and Rose were on, you could just share the hook link and that'll pull up the email for Rose, even if she's just using the free version of Hookmark. So that's a nice little bonus to be able to reference things in a standard kind of way.
Yes. Yeah. That's one of the things where I have struggled a little bit with Hookmark before, because I've wanted universal links that work on iOS and macOS, and some applications, you know, that just isn't going to work because, you know, they've had different URL schemes or whatever. But I have a feeling that, you know, I'm just reading up on Hook's universal links at the moment. I've just found their webpage for that. And so I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes for folks, because obviously if it can grab the universal links as well, then this is just going to take me down to one keyboard shortcut for everything to copy those links, which is, of course, always a nice little time saver and automation in itself.
One word of caution on the universal links is in its current form, they don't actually work on the iPhone and iPad. So that's, that's a limitation I hope will be overcome at some point. They're really only useful, I think, on the Mac.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I will be experimenting with the different URL types that Hookmark supports. And again, I'll pop a link to that into the docs and just their documentation in general, because they seem to have a really good documentation page. So I'm sure folks will want to dive into that and have a good play with all of the options that are out there.
You know, Tim, another interesting implementation of your automation is OpenIn with the Arc browser. Tell us about that.
Yeah, sure. Well, I've been using the Arc as my primary browser for quite a while. There's just some real gems of features that are included in that app. And one of the use cases I face, though, is let's say I have an email with a Notion link, but I want that to open up in my Notion app I've created using as a Safari web app. So that's where Open comes in. It's open in is set as my default browser. It's kind of like the traffic control for all the links that are flying around. And I've set up a number of rules. So for instance, if it is a Notion link, then it's going to open in the Notion app. It won't go to Arc. If it doesn't pass one of the rules there, it's going to be sent off to Arc as being the default. And within Arc, a feature I think that's very few people actually know about is one called traffic control, or air traffic control or something like that. But basically, once something arrives in Arc, you can tell it which profile to use. So for instance, I use WordPress for the Learn OmniFocus website. And if it's an admin link, so if I want to look up like a user on the site or an order or something like that, it's going to take me into the profile where I'm logged into the kind of the back end of the website. Or if it's a YouTube link, it's going to take me to my YouTube profile within the Arc browser. So there's kind of two levels of traffic control happening. There's the open in, which is sending it off to the appropriate web browser, essentially, whether it's Arc or Safari web app. And then there's the traffic control within Arc, which gets even more granular and sends it off to the appropriate profile. So that's just been working really, really well.
That's really cool. I've been looking forward to getting something like this that can then also differentiate between Safari profiles and potentially even Safari tab groups, because this is something where, and I am not blaming any company out there for not integrating with this other than Apple, because they seem to have just not made these APIs available at all, which is just a real shame, because I would really love to be able to say like, hey, when I'm opening, you know, this kind of link, you know, for Snaildit app stuff, for example, I wanted to open in my Snaildit profile versus somewhere else. So I'm kind of having to fudge around it with multiple browsers, or I haven't been using OpenIn. I've been using another app called Choosy, which also lets you create rules to send things off to particular web browsers and so on. And that also has support for different Chrome profiles and so on in there. Now, I'm not really a Chrome user, but I'm feeling like I might need to give that a bit more of a play and maybe give Arc another go as well, just to see how that works with it, because I have a feeling, you know, the fact that it can automatically direct it to those different profiles as well, that's pretty nice. I feel like that would be a useful thing for me.
Yeah, I go back and forth with Arc and Safari. I can't make up my mind. They both, you know, like Safari is just so stable. It's so good on your battery. There's a lot to like about Safari, and like everything integrates with the other versions of Safari and your other devices. But man, Arc sure is a sexy app. I mean, they've got some great features in there. And they're constantly pushing it. That's the other thing I like about it. They're always pushing it. Although they did have a security problem, I think, last month, if memory serves.
Yeah, very recently. They did patch it very quickly, but it was one of those kind of cringe moments where like, how did that happen? So hopefully they've learned from the experience, and I don't think any users were affected from everything that I've read. But yeah. It's just a reminder about how much responsibility there is as any sort of browser maker, especially in terms of privacy and security.
Yes, absolutely. And they have all their release notes on their website as well, which is, you know, just really nice to be able to go and scroll back through and see. You know, I tend to use Safari and Firefox personally, just because Firefox has amazing developer tools, which in my day job, I really need. And then in my not so day job, when I'm there trying to do something on a website, I'm there going, oh, I miss Firefox. Give me Firefox. Safari's great, but Firefox is just something that I'm very used to. But I definitely need to branch out and try more browsers. And I feel like having Choosy already on my Mac is probably a good place to start, because I can redirect things off to different browsers, and then I can maybe have a try at OpenIn.
I'll mention OpenIn's part of the setup suite as well. So if you're a setup subscriber, that's already something you have at your disposal.
That is very good to know. And I will pop a link to the setup link for OpenIn in the show notes as well, folks. So there will be all of the links there to set up versions where we have them. So, Tim, something else I spotted that you put in our show notes is a Better Touch tool. Now, I've been spending a lot of time playing with Better Touch tool recently because on my work machine, I am not using the Stream Deck app at all. And I'm doing everything in Better Touch tool with Keyboard Maestro and shortcuts and a whole bunch of other things. And I've got a mouse which has got 2, 6, or 12 side buttons on it, depending on what I'm doing. And I need to know, what are you doing with Better Touch tool? What problems is it solving for you? Because I know you've got a mouse and a trackpad. So how's that working?
Yeah, sure. So I've got a trackpad sitting to the left of my keyboard, and I've got a Logitech vertical mouse on the right. And one limitation with the Logitech vertical mouse is it doesn't have many buttons on it. And I actually have seen that as an advantage in some ways. Once I started to use Better Touch tool in combination with keyboard shortcuts and mouse buttons, or modifier keys and mouse buttons rather. So for instance, if I'm in Mail and I want to archive a message, I just press the middle mouse button. If I hold down the Command key and press the middle mouse button, it's going to delete it, just to give a very simple example. If I do Option, Command, and middle mouse button, it's going to specifically put an order into the orders folder where I keep track of all of those. One of those things that might sound simple, no big deal, but it does allow me to get through email that much more quickly. And there's something about having just a few buttons to manipulate versus reaching for keyboard shortcuts. It's sometimes quite a welcome change there. So I realized when I combine the modifier keys with the buttons on the mouse, I have far more buttons than I could ever need. And then I'm using my, kind of gotten used to, maybe it's from playing the piano back in the day, I'm used to using both hands at the same time, and it's felt very natural. And if I need to scroll or zoom, I just move my hand a little to the left and I've got the trackpad waiting for me there.
What are some of your favorite shortcuts you're using?
I've got one in OmniFocus as an example where I can mark an action complete and then go to the next action. So it's a very simple macro within Better Touch tool. It just presses the space bar and then the down arrow.
Yeah.
But even something simple like that, because there's a lot of kind of maintenance actions I go through even daily, and I just want to just check it. It maybe takes me 30 seconds to do it. I just hold down that modifier key and press the left button and I'm on to the next one.
I think every OmniFocus nerd has some version of a shortcut where you hit the space bar and the down arrow. Mine is done okay. In Keyboard Maestro, you know, but yeah, I think that like you realize that's necessary as you like work through your data. And that's fun that you added that to the mouse. Well, you have me very interested in this because I think I need to look into it. What I tell the listeners is remember in Better Touch tool that you can set the automation scripts per application. So Tim can have that automation that hits the space bar and the down arrow key only when he's in OmniFocus, but then he could have the exact same, you know, like shift plus click, do something entirely different in Safari or Arc, or, you know, whatever, you know, his browser of choice is.
Yeah, one that I added yesterday was just press the middle key in Keynote and it kicks off the presentation. And just something simple like that.
Yeah.
It's a nice quality of life. And I do have a few global ones for Better Touch tool. So we talked about hook mark earlier. If I hold down the control key and press the left button, mouse button on my mouse, it's the equivalent of control H and it brings up hook mark, which is been very useful. And sometimes I go into an app I haven't used in a while and I can't remember what Better Touch tool integrations I set up. So if I do Control, Option, Command, and then the middle mouse button in any app, it'll pop up a cheat sheet and show me what I've defined previously. So I found that's really useful.
Is that a cheat sheet through Better Touch tool?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I will find that and put that in the show notes because I did not realize that existed. And that is something I need in my life. So I'm sure some of our listeners would like that as well.
Yeah, the action is simply called toggle cheat sheet. So when I do that combination, it just brings that up on the screen.
Excellent.
I don't know. I think I just stumbled across that one when I was sometimes having a little trouble remembering what I'd set the mouse buttons and modifier keys to do. So that's been really useful.
Now, if you want to go crazy, use this with an extended keyboard, and then you're like combining number pad keys or Stream Deck keys plus mouse buttons. It gets nuts very quickly, but Yeah, I like that.
I think one of the keys is to kind of go crazy over time, in a sense.
Exactly. And
don't try to, like, just do this with one app and just get really used to using it. And like, it was, even though I use Keynote a lot, it didn't occur to me till yesterday that I could do some of the same things in Keynote, but not having that also wasn't like holding me back in a big way. It was just one of those. I like to think of these sorts of things as just sort of small quality of life additions to the system, where they're not essential, but they are welcome, and they do make things a little bit easier.
When you get adept at automation, you get a separate trigger in your brain called the "that's annoying" trigger, you know, where you do something repeatedly, like, I want to start a Keynote and I always have to do this, this, and this with the mouse or whatever. It's like, that's annoying. How could I make that easier? And if you've got the knowledge to build the automation at that point, it's very easy. And you've added this better touch tool plus mouse trick to your bag of tricks. So I'm sure that you're slowly discovering many areas where you can do that. And like Tim was saying earlier, I would just pile on to say, never try to learn like 20 shortcuts at once. You know, learn one at a time and then you'll get to 20. But you will never learn 20 at once. I just think it's the way our brains are mapped. Once it becomes muscle memory, then you're okay to put a couple more in. But don't try and do it all at once, or you'll just get overwhelmed and not do any.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where an application like KeyQ or something can come in really handy as well, because that can pop up all of the keyboard shortcuts and things that are already built into an app. And, you know, even if you change them through, you know, the system preferences, you can still see what those have been set to. And that can be very helpful for, you know, figuring out what your next shortcut is that you're going to learn or something, or figuring out a different way to trigger that, which is obviously what you've been doing, Tim. And I think that that's really smart. You know, we do focus heavily on the keyboard here on Automators because our hands tend to be on the keyboard. But if your hand is already on the mouse, then it doesn't make sense to keep taking it off the mouse to, you know, continue doing extended keyboard actions, especially if you're involving the number pad or a macro pad or something like that.
Yeah. And then going back to what we talked about earlier, that's another example of how the trigger can vary, but the actions stay the same. So I might have five different triggers that kick off the same sequence of actions. And it's nice to have that flexibility. If I'm on my laptop and I don't have my mouse or something like that, I can still run the automation. It's just going through a different trigger.
This episode of Automators is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. We've all heard those stories about when you're hiring somebody and you just get a CV in that's completely inappropriate, somebody that just doesn't have the right skills. And that's the sort of thing that wastes a lot of time. And I've seen that happen time and time again. Finding the right person with the right skills and the right personality to fit your team is absolutely critical. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. It helps you find professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. LinkedIn also knows that small businesses are wearing so many hats and might not have the time or resources to hire. That's why they're constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. It's easy to see why 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/automators. That's linkedin.com/automators to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Tim, another thing that you do is a lot of web automation. I know you're a Zapier fan. Tell us why you picked Zapier and what you're doing with it.
Yeah, so it's been many years since I started using Zapier. I think it was probably the only game in town at the time, so it made the choice very easy. And even in the early days, I think they had quite a solid reputation. They really built the tool right. And I've kind of dabbled with the other ones. I know Make is another one that is popular, but Zapier is the one I've learned to trust for many years and I'm familiar with. So there hasn't been really a motivation to move to another app. And it's, I think, one of those cases where if it's not broke, don't fix it. And yeah, it's proven to be very reliable, and it does pretty much everything I need it to do. So I guess it wouldn't be a good use of my time to move that to something else unless I specifically wanted to develop expertise in another app or service.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where, especially if you've been using one of these online services for long enough, the alternative was probably if this and that, which had exactly one trigger and one action. And they did extend it after a while, but it took quite a while, after Zapier came around. And Zapier very much targeted themselves as being a business tool rather than if this and that, which was kind of like, hey, when somebody, sends me an email with this title, set my lights to this color because my sports team's winning or something, which there's nothing wrong with that as, an automation basis, but it is, it does come across more casual and less for this. I am going to be using this for business purposes and this is how I'm going to use it. And I think Zapier has really set themselves up, very well there. And, I've been using Zapier and Make for a long time now, and I have slowly moved more and more things to Make, and I need to sit down at some point, perhaps this weekend, and move more things into just one so that I'm not dealing with multiple systems everywhere. But, it's good to hear that you're still using Zapier and that you're still finding it useful.
I can talk about a few specific use cases, if that'd be helpful.
That would be really helpful.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, one recent one, going back to Notion, is I've got one of the databases in there is a library of all the content, sort of past, present, and future. And when the status of something in the content library goes to in progress, then that triggers a Zap, which adds a task to, in my case, OmniFocus, but you could very easily add a task to things or to Todoist or anything that has kind of a web integration. The one trick with that took me a little while to figure out is I needed to add an extra field in Notion to say, I call it processed by Zapier, and it automatically puts a check on that. Otherwise, that trigger could happen over and over again, and I could end up with 100 tasks for the same thing, essentially. So sometimes there are a few little details to navigate. But now that I've got it in place, it's very simple to kind of kick off the actual work that's being done simply by changing the status in Notion. I probably spent an hour figuring that out when all is said and done, but I could be using that one for years and getting a lot of benefit.
Yes, yeah. That is very smart. And also just the, hey, just limit this so that it doesn't keep happening. Because I know with Airtable, Zapier runs once per record when the record, appearing or moving is the trigger. And that's it across all of your Zaps to prevent you ending up in an infinite loop of this was created and then it got moved here by this automation, then it got moved there by that automation. And it just goes around in a massive circle without anybody ever actually touching it, which would be pretty cool, but that's not necessarily what you're aiming for. So yeah. Remembering, what is the requirement? Okay, so when this is done, why do I not want it to happen again? That's a useful thing to remember with any and all automations.
I think that lesson you learned about the flag saying, hey, this has already been processed, is an important one with web automation. And for a lot of folks out there that are playing with it, that is often a culprit. And you have to really babysit a new web-based automation for a few days to make sure you're not generating 1,000 of whatever the thing is, because the web automation just kept looking at the site and updating itself and throwing one more, task on the pile. I bet that was a surprise to you the first time you went in there and OmniFocus said 120 times start this project or something, right?
Yeah.
It's like, what?
It's something I uncovered during the testing. It wasn't kind of a production automation at that point. And that's why I think thoroughly testing it is key. And then, otherwise, the automation can feel like it's adding weight to the system if suddenly I've got a bunch of tasks to clean up that I didn't create myself or I don't understand why they're being created. So something to be mindful of there are sometimes a few little technical hurdles to overcome with these. And if it's something that's important, if it's very useful automation to have, then it's often worth the effort.
Do you have in your head like a protocol when you make a new automation, like, at what point does it go from testing to production?
I guess it kind of goes into a beta stage. I do some sort of basic testing on it, like in Notion, just creating some sample records and changing the status and updating things and making sure it works as expected. And if I'm pretty convinced it's working, then I'll, yeah, just consider it kind of a beta and maybe try it out for the next couple of weeks, see if there's any edge cases I missed. And I know it's production when I don't even think about it anymore, where it's just humming along nicely and it just does its thing in the background.
Have you guys ever found yourself building an automation and it actually works, it gets out of beta, you know, for lack of a better term, but then you don't actually use it? I do that occasionally. It's like the idea of it was much sexier in my mind than the existence of it. Am I the only one that has that happen once in a while?
I would say it happens to me sometimes, but I wouldn't say it happens all that often, because often if I'm building an automation for a thing, it's because I need to do that same series of actions over a number of things, even if it's only 20 things today. And then I tend to keep the automations around, even if I don't necessarily think I'm going to use them again. I'm not going to delete it and get rid of it because I might need something very similar to that later or in the future. And then I can, you know, I can copy and paste it and start, you know, or reference it and look back at it, which, you know, can be quite handy for things. And speaking of going back to things, one of the things I found when I was doing some automations like Tim did, particularly with MailDrop, it's a little less of a problem if you've got a direct API integration that you might have with, say, Todoist and Zapier, is putting a searchable text string somewhere so that you can then find all of the things and you know where this has come from. And this is something that originally I would go back and I would delete these out of my automations, but I have found actually that it is much better value to just keep them in like the notes or something, so that then later on, if I'm there trying to go, hey, so this OmniFocus task keeps appearing. Where is this coming from? What is causing this? Why is this happening to me? Or, you know, why does this thing keep appearing in reminders? This is very confusing. Then what I can do is I can look into the notes and I usually put it in double brackets and then have like something. And so if it's a shortcut that's running it, it'll be shortcut colon and then the name of the shortcut. If it's a Zapier action, it'll be Zapier colon the name of the Zap and things like that, just to help me find it later when I am trying to backtrace where this magical thing is coming from to explain it to somebody else, or just to tweak it or to replicate it. Or, you know, if something's gone awry and I have 120 of these things appear, like Drafts recently added a mail drop feature, which is really cool. But if I automate something, I'm going to have to make sure that I add something to the bottom of that so that I know where those are coming from, because I don't want to overwhelm Greg's mail service with a load of emails if I have an automation go awry.
Yeah, that's a great idea, because it's much easier to put in that little kind of note to future self than it is to try to, yeah, trace where is this thing coming from. And it's not always very obvious.
Yeah, self-documenting versus, you know, I could write it into an Obsidian document or put it into DevonThink or something, but then I absolutely have to update that if I am going to change things. And if I just change something really quickly on my phone on the fly, I may not remember to do that, but if there is something that's actually directly there in the automation, then I will almost certainly remember to update it because it's right there where I can see it.
And if it is one that I don't currently use but has potentially future value, I mean, in like Zapier, for instance, I'll maybe leave it in there, but I'll disable it. So when I'm going through my Zaps, I see that this is maybe there is potentially useful in the future, or I put a lot of work into this one and I might want to at least refer back to it or duplicate it, create something similar. And then if it's been a year and I realize, yeah, this doesn't really serve a purpose anymore, I'll just delete it at that point.
So often we get, you know, lessons from prior automations, like, you know, you keep them around just so you remember how you pulled something off, and the diagnostic and kind of README or notes to future self related to complex automations are what's going to get you out of a hole so many times.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's one of those things where it's, you know, it's amazing the number of times that a little thing from past me has just popped up somewhere and I've gone, oh yes. Yes. Past me actually thought that this was a good idea, which is why this task is in my task manager or whatever it is. And, you know, just adding a little bit of context to these things so that, you know, it's not just a bolt out of the blue. It is something that is, you know, a little more helpful than that and has a little bit of context. It's like when you write a task to yourself, instead of just saying, you know, like, do the washing up, you know, like having something that's actually nice of, you know, make sure your home is clean and tidy by cleaning the dishes. That's a really bad, deliberately bad example, but just remembering the purpose of the thing that's magically appearing in front of you is quite important when it comes to automations.
Another automation platform that you use, and I definitely think this is an automation platform, is Alfred. And we always like to talk about folks' preferences for keyboard launchers right now, like automation. We have this abundance of riches with Raycast and Alfred and LaunchBar and these great apps around, all following kind of the legacy of our beloved Quicksilver. But Alfred's your weapon of choice here. Why is that, and what are you doing with it?
I think it's another case of if it isn't broken, don't fix it. And I have played with Raycast as well, and there's definitely a lot to like about that. There's just some really key automations and workflows I've got in Alfred that I would really, really miss. Having universal actions is something that is maybe a little bit of an underused feature in Alfred, where you can just select any text, for instance, and kick off a search. I use that all the time. So I could, for instance, I've got a custom search to look for a user in the backend database for Learn OmniFocus. So I could select their name or their email, press its control option command backslash in my case. And then that's easily fed into the search for like a subscriber or user or something like that. Or if I want to look up a movie that someone mentions in an email, I can send that off to a search without any copying and pasting. So again, it's one of those things that it's not essential, but it is one of those little niceties that improves the quality of life and just makes things a little bit faster, just feels a little bit more seamless. So that's universal actions. I've got one for finding folders, one that I got from you, David, that you had like variations on that, where I've got one for like finding folders, but only within my client's folder or my Learn OmniFocus folder. And again, just it makes it incredibly quick to get to the information I want. So it'd be hard to imagine not using that.
Yeah, one of the things I've been doing a lot recently is because I've been playing with Better Touch tools so much, and specifically using it for my Stream Deck controls and reworking my Stream Deck setup on my work machine, is I have actually been using a lot of Keyboard Maestro URLs to run Keyboard Maestro macros, because I already have macros for a bunch of these things. And so I've been using Stephen Millard's fabulous Alfred plugin Conductor, so that I can just, you know, open Alfred, type KM, search for the thing. So for example, activate Slack, and then I can press the control key and hit return, and it copies the URL to run that macro to my clipboard, and I just paste it straight into Better Touch tool. And having things like that right under my fingers is really easy. And I know some folks, some friends of mine even have struggled with creating Alfred workflows and so on. But I feel like there's so many out there that you don't necessarily need to create them. You can just download them and borrow them from everybody else.
Yeah, the folder one was an adaptation of one that was on the public website. And if you just take it apart, there's not much to it. And I had done it for client files, the exact same, you know, you invoke Alfred, and I think I type F space, and then it's just searching client folders, which a lot of times is what you want to do. I think no matter which one you use, there's a lot of good ones now. And every time this comes up, I have Raycast people writing me saying, you're not covering Raycast enough. Well, that's because I, like Tim, I've got Alfred wired so well that it's hard for me to justify going over. But every time I look at Raycast, they've got most of the tools that I'm doing in Alfred. So you know, six of one, half dozen the other. But the important thing is you get one of these tools and slowly customize it to your liking, because it really does just dramatically improve your speed on your Mac, maybe more than any other automation tool when you think of it. I know I've several times been working on my Mac in front of friends or people who are not as nerdy as me. And I just, you know, it's so internal to me. I hit, you know, command space and do a couple things, and suddenly my computer jumps to life and they're like, what did you just do? I mean, they're always shocked by it. You know, I think most people don't even try Spotlight, much less one of these tools.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I have also heard is that it's a little more difficult to submit the plugins for Raycast than it is for Alfred. Alfred will happily let multiple things exist with similar names in their galleries, but a friend of mine did try to create a new time zone integration or plugin for Raycast, which works differently to the one that's already there. And they were told, oh no, like you can't have that because we already have a time zones one.
Yeah.
It's like, that doesn't work how my brain wants it to work. So that's not going to work for them. But yes, you can still create your own and download third-party ones. You just can't submit it to the store, which is a shame.
Yeah, it's a bit more curated, you know. I think that's their
Has pros and cons to it for sure.
Yeah.
So Tim, something else you had on the list, which I use every day, and I don't even think about it until today. Literally earlier today, I was on a call with a colleague, and I was sharing my screen, and I opened my database up, and I pasted in the ID, and I selected it, and then I clicked on the button that appeared above it, and my colleague went, "Wait, what was that? How did you do that?" And the answer to that is PopClip, because it automatically took the ID and wrapped it in the magic to make sure the database query actually worked. But I'm curious, what are you using PopClip for? Because, I mean, it pops up like the little bar does on iOS and iPadOS with the copy and paste. But there's so many plugins. I'm curious what you're using.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's one of those things. It almost feels like it's built into macOS at this point because I've been using it for so long. And I don't tend to use it for the standard cut, copy, paste things because I've already got those well established under my fingers. But for a lot of text manipulation, that's probably my number one use case, putting it in title case or lowercase. There's one called Slugify. I just like the little icon with the slug there where it turns it into something you could use for a website address. And that one's surprisingly useful if I'm just creating a slug for some Learn OmniFocus content or something. There's some more advanced things like URL encoding. Sorting is a great one. There's an OmniFocus one that fairly recently was updated to OmniFocus 4. I'll take a little bit of credit for that because I was lobbying the developer, Nick, to have that be updated. But it's just really nice to be able to select some text and turn it into an OmniFocus action. I think there's similar ones for Todoist and things as well. So it's one of those that there's probably plugins all insert extensions I'll install in the future that I could be using, but I just want to get used to using the current set and then sort of add to it as it makes sense.
Yeah. One of the things I've done with this recently is if I select text in Keyboard Maestro, then it offers me a percent variable as an icon. And if I click that, or it's actually percent VAR, and if I click that, then it wraps the currently selected text with percent variable percent before and then just a percent sign afterwards. So if I've copied and pasted a variable name, then I can easily turn it into a variable in a text block, for example, which has been quite useful for me.
And I love that.
I really like PopClip. I'm using automation to make other automation easier. Why wouldn't you do this? You know, it's
Rose wrote Keyboard Maestro code completion with PopClip. Rose, we love you. That's why you would do
something. I am that sort of nerd, and I am not going to apologize for it because that is exactly who I am. But this is also something that is really nice about PopClip is you don't have to have the same actions everywhere. You can have actions appear contextually in certain applications depending on, you know, because you can write them yourself. There's a really handy little guide. I'll see if I can find it in the forums or if they put it in the documentation now for like, it's literally just a little block of text. You write a little block of text in something like Drafts or BBEdit, and then it turns into a PopClip action, which is really great for, you know, just really simple things like adding this thing before and after and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I personally think that PopClip is really amazing. And I'll link the documentation as well as that particular kind of action creation.
Yeah, but unlike Tim, I have installed PopClip plugins with reckless abandon. So I have the arrow of shame. If you have too many plugins, it fills up the entire bar and gives you a little arrow at the end where you can get the rest of them that you've plugged in. And now listening to Tim, I feel like I need to audit mine and get down to just one little bar of PopClip plugins. I don't need two of them.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where I found, you know, going through and just unchecking ones I'm not sure about right now. Is a really good start because you don't have to uninstall them to hide them. And then you can go through and just do a little bit of a due justice, selection. And then, of course, there's always exporting, tweaking to make it only available in certain applications and then putting it back, or only available with certain text selected, and so on and so forth.
One little pro tip to add to is sometimes it's convenient to activate PopClip using the keyboard instead of like a mouse selection. Mm-hmm. So I use a keyboard Maestro macro for that, which just invokes PopClip. I think it's just like one line of Apple script or something like that. And so that gives the kind of the power of PopClip without the unnecessary reaching for the mouse.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, Tim, if people want to learn more about what you're up to, where should they go?
Yeah, so Technically Simple is the company I founded way back in 2003. And that's where I promote my consulting services, mainly OmniFocus and Asana. And then Learn OmniFocus is my membership-based site from 2014. Yeah, and you'll find all the information there.
Well, congratulations on 10 years with Learn OmniFocus. Everybody go check it out. We are the Automators Podcast. You can find us at relay.fm/automators. Thank you to our sponsors this week, LinkedIn Talent Solutions and Notion. For those of you that are Automators Max subscribers, I should have mentioned at the top of the show, you are able, with the show shutting down, you will be able to transfer your Automators Max subscription to another show if you want. And there's some other options too. We're working with Relay right now. We're recording this a little early, so we'll be taking care of you. And, but those Automators Max subscribers, do stick around, because we are going to be talking about OmniFocus automation plugins. We couldn't help ourselves, so we're going to be covering that one. Otherwise, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye, folks.